We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode and catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Today, anyway, joining us now live from on the hotline, Bob Stefanowski. Hello, Bob.
Good morning, Pastor Will.
I want you to feel no pressure at all to make any announcements today.
You're asking me every week. I'll tell you, one of these days, maybe I'll crack. We'll see.
Well, you know, I was both stunned and somewhat feeling vindicated yesterday that the president, the chairman of the World Health Organization, said that lockdowns are probably counterproductive. The lockdowns do not help people. They don't help the economy. They don't help people physically, emotionally. And I'm wondering if Governor Lamont heard that speech at all. And is that gonna have any bearing on how things are moving and progressing here in Connecticut? I mean, I have to say, I don't know about you, but I'm pleased at least that schools, for the most part, are continuing with in-person learning. How do you feel?
No, I agree with that. I mean, I had an editorial a couple of weeks ago. I think the social side, you know, there's two aspects of health. There's the physical side, which is very closely measured, number of infections, number of people that died. But there's the mental side, which is as important. And if you're a 17-year-old kid who needs to, or any age, you need to socialize, you need to get to school, you need to get to know your peers. That's part of growing up. And I think it's going to be, when the book is written on COVID, it's going to be what happened to the emotional development of people of all ages, but especially kids, for being locked at home for nine months to a year. Yeah. You got to consider that. You really do.
Well, I think so. And I mean, I know from our own family, I know one of our younger son was extremely upset. And at one point it just kind of came out how much he did not like being home and not being near his friends and doing his work training and his teachers. And I mean, it was devastating, and how happy he is to be back and doing it again. So, I mean, that's just one microcosm, one person. But I imagine that same kind of emotional stress, if not really trauma, has taken place in a lot of kids in our state.
Well, I got to double check the numbers, but I looked it up yesterday, and I still can't believe it. But under the age of 30, people from 1 year old to 29-year-old, we had six deaths in the state, which for those families is obviously a horrible thing. But that's six deaths out of 1.3 million people in that age group.
Yeah,
that's 0.00004%. And
I mean,
again, you don't want anyone to die from this, but you got to look at the cost benefit. You've kept 1.3 million people locked up for six deaths, and that's the relevant metric. The governor keeps talking about incident rate and how low we are. The relevant metric is how many people died. Yeah. And on that statistic, Connecticut is the third worst in the country in terms of deaths per capita. And I think the governor's gotten a free pass on that, other than people like you and Todd Feinberg in the afternoon.
Yeah.
He has not done a good job managing this crisis, and he gets away with it.
I mean, I can't believe the hubris of Governor Cuomo, who's coming out with a book applauding himself on how well he handled the virus, when he's had the worst case possibility of seniors dying in nursing homes in New York. And it was under his executive order that it happened.
Well, it just seems bizarre now, and it seemed bizarre then. Governor Cuomo and Governor Lamont both decided to take sick people and put them in nursing homes. you know, granted it was another wing, but who makes the decision to take somebody who's infected with a virus that you know is deadly, yeah, and you put them into the most vulnerable population in an entire state, and then, by the way, you don't give them any PPE to protect themselves. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't make any sense whatsoever. So it's one thing to make a mistake. It's another thing, to your point, to go around bragging about how well you did when people have died because of basically what you did. It's amazing, Pastor Will. It really is.
Well, here we are. Here we have. We're calling in the Army and the Army Corps of Engineers. We're bringing in massive hospital ships into New York Harbor, and we're building field hospitals. We barely used any of that resource. Even here in Connecticut, we put up several field hospitals, didn't use any of them. And we should have taken all of that urgency and the money, and we should have put it into protecting our seniors in nursing homes. And we probably did the least well job of protecting that population.
I agree with you. And it's not, you know, people give us credit for handing out 1.5 million masks, and that's fine. We had a great charity that did it, but it's common sense.
Yeah.
I mean, if you remember, you had Robert Kraft and the owner of the Patriots. They had a big, you know, jetliner that came from Florida with 500,000 masks. Well, while everybody's out there getting credit for what they're doing, you know, MaskForCT.org was out there handing out 1.5 million masks and helping people. We were getting calls from nursing homes at the start. They were begging. They were crying when you showed up with masks. And again, I don't think people have been focused on the right thing, which is protecting our most vulnerable. And I don't think Connecticut did that from the start. And at some point, hopefully people are going to focus on it. Because if this ever happens again, you got to make sure you start with your most vulnerable. Those are the ones you protect first.
Well, the fact that these guys are doing a victory lap now, it's not even over. Cuomo's writing a book. You know, every time you see the governor on TV, our governor, he's talking about what a great job we're doing. And yet no one's addressing the fact that the majority of deaths in both of our states, and New York leads the country in deaths, the majority of those deaths happened by seniors in nursing homes. And no one's talking about that at all. And no one's holding their feet to the fire on that. I saw one interview with Cuomo where at least the person doing the interview said, well, how do you explain this? And he talked about the nursing homes. And Cuomo's answer was, well, here's a lesson for the American people. Nobody knows what's going to happen when a novel virus hits. Well, they even address the question, and he's arrogant on top of it. So, I mean, it just was ridiculous. But I think it just baffles me.
In the face, and it is. And thank God, you know, my family hasn't been impacted for elderly in nursing homes. But if you were, if you have a relative that was in a nursing home that passed away because of this, that's bad enough. But then you see the governor up there bragging about how well we do.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I don't want to exaggerate, but it's almost like Governor Lamont gets some sort of pride that the other states are worse. And, you know, is bragging about how well Connecticut did when again, the metric is deaths. It's not incidents. If you get it and you recover, it's not a great thing, but you recover. You look at the death metric, we are not doing well. And he needs to take more of a surgical approach and focus on where it's needed rather than shutting down the entire economy, because there's implications to that.
Well, again, I we're hearing, and I don't have any reason to doubt this, that there'll be an increased presence of COVID in flu season, and we're getting into that time of year. And I'm just wondering, what's the response going to be this time? Is it shut the state down again and further ruin the economy? I mean, you've got businesses that are closing, restaurants that are closing, churches that are closing, probably never open again. How do you justify that? And when you don't even know what you're doing, and clearly they don't know what they're doing, and now you've got the WHO saying, well, you know, lockdowns probably weren't the best thing to do, and they're detrimental. And well, wait a minute. You were the guys that said to do it in the first place. So, and I've got this report on masks. I'm taking a lot of heat for that. Masks, they're just saying, quite frankly, masks aren't as effective as people think they are, unless they're N95s. They certainly, all masks, whether it's a cloth face covering or surgical mask, everything obviously has a benefit to it, but it's not the only answer. It's not the sole answer to the problem.
Well, I'll tell you what struck me is we were up at Rentschler Field during mass one day, and that's where they were having the food handouts, and you realize that a bad economy and people not having enough money to feed themselves, that has as much of an impact on health as the virus does. And you got to be careful that you don't err on, you know, number of incidents on the virus. And meanwhile, people can't live healthy because they don't have any money.
Right.
And, you know, I was surprised at some of the cars. You know, these were nice cars driving up, and you wonder why they're in line. And the explanation was a lot of people live very close to the edge. You know, they've got 2 or 3 months of car payments in the bank. They got 2 or 3 months of rent payment in the bank. And if their business is shut down for 6 consecutive months, they're out of money. And they're in a food line. So, you know, you got to be very careful with the economy, and you got to find the right balance. And I don't think Connecticut has.
No, I don't think so. I think a lot of what we did was reactionary based on what other states did. And we knew that. We knew we were following New York's lead or Rhode Island's lead. We were just copying what they were doing. And who's to say what they were doing was correct? I mean, I know it from our food pantry. We operate a very robust food pantry in Meriden. And we're up to servicing, helping feed over 800 families a month, far, far more than last year. Last year, we gave away 230,000 pounds of food year over year. We're going to outpace that tremendously this year. So you're right. I mean, there's just people that normally weren't taking advantage of services like that find themselves, you know, where they have to because they've lost their job or they've been out of work or they couldn't get an unemployment check because that system was all messed up based on, you know, programming from 40 years ago. I mean, there's a lot of things you could look at and say, really, we really didn't do a great job with this thing. And even the stuff that we did may really make a difference because it was just going to run its course anyway.
Well, it's a lesson in how inefficient government is. Everything from not having the PPE for weeks when all you really needed to do was drive down to New Jersey and put them in your back car,
right.
You know, and pay cash to not being able to get employment checks out because your computer system is COBOL, which I trained in college in 1984. That's how old that software system is. So you've got ancient systems. You've got procurement rules that just do not work in an emergency. Because you have to move quickly, and the private sector, thank goodness, stepped in and helped a lot of people. But there should be a review after all this is over, and try to get government better ready for these types of things. Because it's just not.
You know, it's funny to me. I've been getting a lot of pushback the last week and a half, and all I'm doing is sharing a report that was written by doctors for doctors. It's the American Association of Physicians and Surgeons. It's an independent organization representing doctors since 1943. And all I'm saying is what says in the report. And yet people just are attacking me. And I'm wondering, is it a kind of a thing where politics, at some point, politics supersedes common sense? Politics supersedes whatever it says is supposed to be science? I think we blew that argument up pretty well with some of the foolish decisions we made here. They weren't based on science. They were based on something, but they weren't based on science. Do you think people are having a hard time sorting through truth, common sense, and science versus politics at this point?
I think they are, Pastor Will. I mean, you could have the same event happen, and you turn on Fox News, and it's one spin on it, and you turn on CNN, and you think it's a different event. I mean... So the facts are, you know, politics is a rough game, and you try to be truthful, but people will spin it to their own benefit. And, you know, again, not to get on a tangent, but the problem with politics now is there's a lot of good people that won't put themselves through it. I mean, look at who the Democrats are putting up for president of the United States.
Know,
he seems
I
like
know.
A nice man, but you're telling me there's nobody better qualified in the entire country to be the Democratic, you know, candidate. A lot of people just won't put themselves through it because, to your point, the facts are irrelevant. People can say whatever they want.
Yeah. Well, it's amazing that, you know, you hear this, the progressive left is so driven on, you know, really what's basically, not basically, what is socialism. They want to convert the country to a socialistic country. And they talk about the, you know, youth and youth being the driving force behind it, and what do they do for your candidate? They put a guy up who, if he wins, he'd be the oldest president in history inaugurated. He's definitely, you know, lacking in stamina and endurance. No one expects him to make his first turn. I just think it's kind of bizarre that this party supposedly pushing youth and progressive ideas puts up an old wealthy white guy that probably won't make it through his first term.
Well, you got to look at Kamala Harris because there's a good chance it's going to be President Kamala Harris in the next 4 years.
Yes.
I mean, you know, obviously you don't wish anything bad on everybody, but you got to think that there's a decent possibility that she's going to be the President of the United States.
Well,
and, you know, it's scary. It really is.
What do you make, Bob, of these all these absentee ballots? We've got now a story here: 3%, almost 4% of Connecticut ballots have been returned for various inconsistency to their clerk, town clerks. And we had right here in Wallingford, and I hate to say it because you know how much I love Wallingford. I live in Wallingford. I think it's wonderful. But we had 261 ballots that went out that had the wrong names of the wrong state reps for the areas on the ballots. I just wondering what, you know, again, in under the guise of protecting people from COVID, we had this you know, unusual rush and push to unsolicited absentee ballots. I'm just wondering if it's going to backfire on Election Day.
Well, I get back to the, you know, when this started, right, it was you have a responsibility to get up, to go to the poll and put, you know, put the thing in the box. And if there were some reason you're out of town or you can't get out of your house, then, okay, that's legitimate. But I just think we've pushed it to be a convenience. And, you know, that in a lot of cases it's not necessary. You want everyone to have the opportunity. But when it's as easy as it is and you see ballots going out to the wrong people, to dead people, to people that moved out of the state, mm-hmm. at some point you got to look at the integrity of the process. Mm-hmm. And it's a problem. My election night, you know, when I ran for governor, they were putting kids on buses at UConn who had voted in their home state. And they said, well, don't worry about it. We can't track it. Vote again. Mm. Get on the bus, get a piece of pizza, come on over and pull the Democratic, you know. And again, it wasn't enough to swing the election, but that type of stuff happens.
Of course it does.
It absolutely happens. And in some of these local races, you could lose by 10 or 15 votes. And it swings the control of the state house or the state senate, and that's a problem. You got to make sure that it's legitimate, and that's what I worry about.
Well, you look at your run with I mean, 1.4 million votes cast for governor, and the difference was 42,000 votes. So I mean, that's a tiny percentage of votes, really. I mean, what, less than 3%. So yeah, it makes a difference. It makes a big difference. And if you've got all these ballots, you know, I mean, I can't tell you how many people have told me stories of. They've got mail to their home, request for absentee ballot, person has been deceased for already a couple of years. To their adult kids have been moved out of the house, out of state for several years, getting requests for absentee ballot. I mean, I don't know what the quality control on the whole process was, but if they can't get the applications for the ballots right, how in the world are we supposed to trust them that all the ballots are going to be counted and counted right and not double counted and not two and three people or people voting two and three times? How are we supposed to trust that process?
Well, it's another area of government, which if you're going to pay for some automation, it's an area you should pay because the implications are so important to these elections. Why not have some technology around this where you can actually go in and they can tell if you are who you are and you know, be able to track it? And again, you don't want to prohibit anybody from who wants to vote and has the right to vote. Mm-hmm. But clearly there are errors out there. And nobody other than your show and some of the other, you know, Todd Feinberg and others, nobody seems to want to talk about that, Pastor Will. Nobody wants to admit that there is going to be a certain percentage of votes that are improper. And nobody seems to worry about that, which is interesting that it happens. Maybe because it works in their favor. I don't know, but I do think it's something we need to look at.
Yeah. No, I agree, and I feel, you know, everybody made such a dust up about Russian collusion and everything else, and the fact of the matter is we're injecting something into our, and again, if this was tried on a kind of an off year, if it wasn't such a big election, and you wanted to do all these absentee ballots, that's one thing, but to use an untested, really an untested method of voting. Across the board in all these states for a presidential election, to me, seems spurious.
No, I agree. And then the excuses come out. I remember in 2018, you know, we didn't get the ballots done until 3 o'clock in the morning. And the reason is they were wet. And I was sitting in the hotel. Well, how are they wet? It's not raining inside. I mean, how are they wet? And why is that delaying an outcome? And again, I'm not disputing the results. It was 40,000 votes and, you know, fair and square, but it just opens yourself up to things that you just can't control, as opposed to it being automated.
Yeah. With the wet ballots, I remember that clearly. Well, and so I always say, when you look up the word fraud in the dictionary, there's a definition of Bridgeport. Hey, thank you so much for taking time out. Really appreciate it. I won't stress you for announcement today. Maybe we'll get it next week.
All right. Well, you keep up the good work. You got great.
Appreciate what you do.
I love being on your show. I really appreciate it.
Folks love hearing you. Thanks so much for taking time.
All right. Have a good day. Pastor.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.